Hello, this is Bixby. Welcome to the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast. Here is your host, Roger Kibbe.
Hello, Bixby Developer Chat listeners. Today, I have the honor of talking to Shama Prayaga. Shama is the founder of the Digital Assistant Academy, a podcast host, and a product owner for Ford Motor Company's Digital Assistant. In short, she's a thought leader for voice. Shama, please introduce yourself.
Thank you so much, Roger. My name is Shamla, like you mentioned, and you already introduced me. So I the autonomous digital assistant effort at Ford Motor Company. So anything to do with conversational AI in autonomous world, like how the users will use the vehicle, what kind of use cases will be relevant for voice, I pretty much look at those and the vision of the voice assistants in the car, and also look at the strategies of the now, near and far, the partnerships and things like that. And like you mentioned, I'm also the founder of the Digital Assistant Academy. So basically, here, I realized that there is a lot of gap when it comes to voice design in general. Many of the people in here are self-learners, and I wanted to make some sort of standards around the learning of voice as we are thinking about standardizing the privacy and the ethics and other aspects of voice design. It is really important to also think about standardizing the education, because we definitely want to make sure the conversations which are designed or the experiences designed are also at par, and that is why I started the academy, where we are trying to standardize the voice technology. And yes, I do have a podcast, and basically the concept is I want people to learn through my podcast about the different concepts of voice technology or different aspects of voice technology, and that is why I started the podcast. And it is called The Future is Spoken.
And I highly recommend it. So you work at Ford Motor in conversational AI. You run the Digital Assistant Academy, and you're a podcast host. So in other words, you're telling me you don't sleep.
I take full 9 hours of sleep also.
Oh, okay.
That is really important for me.
You're super productive then. Hey, tell me a little bit more about what you do for Ford. I know that there's some voice assistants already in the cars. Are you involved in that? Are you forward-looking in the future? Tell me a little bit more about that.
So I was part of the Sync 4 voice assistant. So I designed the experience for Sync 4, looking at what the user would say and how the system would respond to looking at the different use cases, what we show on the screens, and then the visual cues and all of that effort. And then here in the autonomous, it's more looking towards the future, because our first vehicle will be launched somewhere around 2022-23. So I'm looking at that vehicle line and looking at the use cases for autonomous. So I love saying this: when vehicle becomes the driver, voice becomes the companion. So because there's no other modality, and voice is your only modality. If you have any questions, you're not driving, you have ample time in the car. So looking at different use cases, like what would be relevant in that scenario, and how do we enable users so that they are actually having a great time in the vehicle, they have a great user experience in the vehicle. That's what I look at.
Great. So you're saying that voice then you're seeing as the primary modality in a self-driving car, as I jump in and say, take me to, I don't know, restaurant X, and then it goes and does that, and that's the primary way that I'd interface with a self-driving car?
We are not yet there with the self-driving cars. And that's a very far-fetched vision, but definitely that will happen in future. But think about situations like you are in the car, and all of a sudden now you want to, and this is not even your car, it's like when you are in Uber car, and it could be any, you don't know the controls, or you may not be very comfortable using the thing. So if someone is in a self-driving car where the car is driving itself, you may have 100 million questions. Maybe you just want to know about, hey, how do you see the road? Or you may just want to ask, give some sort of complaint about the car stinks, or the car is in very bad shape, or something like that. Or maybe you want to give a feedback, like I had an excellent ride today, or something like that. Or just the basic chit chat, like when I used to take Uber, I love talking with Uber drivers all the time. because it's nice to connect with people, talk with them, understand. And especially I would use Uber when I used to drive around to other cities. So knowing about what's famous here in the city or what kind of food and things like that, those are the kind of things. And pretty much if you are in your own city, you may not use it. Eventually, if self-driving becomes the norm, that's a different thing. But most of the time, self-driving would be prominent for people who are in different cities or want to try out things, or even if you have a couple of chores to do and stuff, and maybe you're not versed with the system, versed with the location, it could be anything. And that is why I say it that way. Now, similar to how Alexa in-house, you can ask Alexa to do all sorts of things like control your climate or your lights and stuff like that. You can do pretty much the same kind of things even with the car. You may want to do those things, or you just want to say, hey, can you just play me that movie? So it's like all sorts of things. And if we look at beyond that point as well, there may be things where people are using voice assistants in the car for productivity, like attending meeting. And I used to do that all the time. Like I would have meetings at morning 7 o'clock, and no way I would be at office at 7 o'clock. So I ended up like taking meetings while I was driving. And now imagine if I don't have to drive and I am able to take the meetings, I would prefer using my big screen in the cars to do those kind of things. So there are a lot of such kind of things which will enable people in the vehicle. And that is why I say maybe in future, if we are at a point where we can say, okay, now drive me to Starbucks and from there take me to this place and order some food or something like that. But that's not something happening immediately in the autonomous world because it's very complex structure.
Yeah, that's an exciting feature. As you're talking, I was thinking about kind of those old school things where you have a tour of a city on, well, tape or CD, or you can do it on a phone right now. Wouldn't it be super cool in the future to jump in, I visit a city, and I jump in an autonomous car, and I'm like, okay, show me the sights. And it drives me around, and it talks about the sights and interacts, and I could talk back and forth and get more information, and it's driving me around. I think many, many use cases that you mentioned there were exciting, but that one jumped in my mind as a really kind of fun and cool one and something that would be exciting in a new city to do.
Definitely, tour guide, yeah. And I think the industry is looking for such use cases as well, because there's a lot of opportunities, I would say, when it comes to like autonomous vehicle and what can be done when you don't have to be restricted by the driver distraction guidelines.
Absolutely. All right, so tell me more about Digital Assistant Academy. You introduced it, but tell me a little bit more about what it encompasses and what you're doing with it.
Yeah, like I mentioned, I worked with so many different companies, including Ford and Amazon and Voicebox Technology, which was acquired by Cerence. So working through all of these companies, what I realized was there's a huge gap when it comes to process. Every company follows their own process. Amazon in the past used to have Excel sheets, and we used to call it voice scripts and then create the voice flows out of that. And then here at Ford, we use Visio flows and stuff like that. But even if you look at the overall conversation in general, there's a huge gap because there's not a lot of learning material out there in first place. So people are learning whatever, however they are, through their own experiences and just getting into the waters, a kind of thing. So what I realized is there has to be some sort of learning platform which will help people to learn about conversation design and voice technologies in general. Because most of the people who come into the voice technology field come from linguistics background or UX background. They may not be aware of the technology side of things. Or if they don't come from UX background, and if they come from sonic design background or linguistics background, they may have the psychological aspect of things, but they may not have the UX aspect of things. Or they may not have the technology aspect of things. And that is where there are courses out there, but they don't do justice all in all. And that is why I realized like we need to create a more holistic bootcamp kind of program. So Digital Assistant Academy provides a bootcamp kind of program. It is a 6 months immersive program, 3 capstone projects, where you get to work on 3 different projects, one for Alexa, one for Google Assistant, and then one Messenger app. So that way you are creating something which will become part of your portfolio. But our focus has been mainly on not just teaching you the fundamentals of conversation design and the voice technology, but also diving deeper into what ASR is, what NLP is, what text-to-speech engine is, how do you tune the text-to-speech engine engines? How does ASR system works, and what is required in the natural language understanding piece of things? How do you create the language model and things like that? So it focuses on all of the aspects of, or nuts and bolts, I would say, of voice interaction design and conversation design, and not just the dialogue between a user and a bot.
That's great. I think it's so valuable for people getting into the industry to understand. Let me back up a little bit. If I'm a UI designer, that's pretty well understood. There's some UI standards. The tech is pretty well understood. But I think one of the challenges people get into voice, and we all have these expectations of voice based upon talking to each other, not working with a voice assistant. And I think it's good to understand, frankly, the technology and the limitations, but also the design. Because I will tell you, actually, frankly, I think our biggest challenge in the voice industry as far as talent is not on the technology side, it's on the design side. We need way more skilled, talented voice designers to design amazing experiences. Because I see a lot of great technology and much less great design. So if someone asks me, how do I get in? What should I jump into in voice? The first thing out of my mouth would be look at design, because I think that's where there's so much. There's amazing designers, but there's too few of them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And adding on to that point, technology helps the designers to actually think about the conversation. It's like a UX designer needs to think about the tech challenges so that when they are designing, they are not really shooting the moonshot vision that is not even possible at the now. It's the same kind of thing. So if you know how the tech works, if you know the limitations, it will be really helpful to design the experience around that. But then when you talk about designing the experiences, there are so many things to consider, right? It's not just about the sample dialogue between the user and the bot, which is really important. But how does that boil down to, or how does that complement with the screens which you have, or the templates you show? Samsung has different voice experiences in refrigerators and everywhere, right? How do you show things to people?
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
So you also have to think about those kind of things and not just the dialogue. So also thinking about how can you make it inclusive for people so that people who are not able to hear are still able to see what you're saying and vice versa. So there's a lot of things to think about. So it's not just something you can learn through a bunch of learnings. It is something you have to be immersed in order to get a full advantage of.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's one of those things that from the outside seems a heck of a lot simpler than it is when you get involved and all of a sudden it's, wow, there's a lot to this. And there's a lot to discover. We're so early in it that there's so much learning that needs to be discovered. Hey, but I want to ask you one of my favorite questions of people on my podcast, which is, you've been in voice for a while. What was your first experience with a voice assistant? When did you get started?
Oh boy, yeah. That's an interesting question. I used to work for Amazon, and a bunch of folks, like, we used to carpool to office so that we don't have to get into the traffic lane and we can just use the pool lane and stuff like that. So once we were coming back from work, and then one of my colleagues was super, super hungry, and he was like, okay, he was driving. So he was like, hey, do you guys want to eat something? I was like, yeah. And then we all agreed. And then we started looking out for restaurants. And he just picked his phone and he's like, hey, Siri, where is the nearest Indian restaurant? And before that, I hardly knew about Siri or any such things. It was way back in like 2012. Mm-hmm. So that's what happened. And my Siri is on here now and giving me some options.
Never a voice podcast. You got to mute everything. Yes, I have like within hand's reach pretty much every voice assistant. I'm familiar with that challenge. Okay, so you started. So your first experience was hearing somebody use Siri.
Yeah.
But tell me, now you're deeply immersed in voice as a both a career at Ford, and then you have the Digital Assistant Academy and podcasts. You're in, all in on voice. Tell me about your progression from first hearing Siri to being all in on voice, personally and professionally.
It's been an interesting journey. Like I mentioned, first my experience was hearing someone using that assistant for the first time. And then there was a hackathon in 2012 where I participated. This was called a Jungly hackathon. And Amazon was basically looking at how we can enable. Jungly was a product which they launched in India. Basically, it was Amazon equivalent, but just to understand and test the waters, that's what they started with. So basically, the idea was like, how many people would, what will we do, or what kind of innovation should we bring for people to try things online or buy online stuffs? And one of the idea I proposed was Jungly shopping tool, which was an augmented reality application where I thought, well, people like to try a couple of products online before before buying, especially apparels or accessories. I want to try the nail paint before I purchase that, or I want to try the lipsticks and stuff like that. But the biggest challenge is these online products show you on some model, but they don't show you on a real person, or you cannot try it out yourself. So that is the biggest blocker back in 2012, which I identified was the reason why many people don't prefer buying online. So the idea was, through augmented reality using your phone, people can try products online and they can see how the lipstick looks on me, or how does that hair color looks on me before I purchase that and stuff like that. So when I designed the entire solution, what I realized was augmented reality and phone was great, but then I still have to hold my phone very close and then try things out. So it was not really working out. So that's when I realized, well, voice, yeah, Siri is there. So why not try something like that? And that's when I actually added voice into it. And I realized, like, it will be a great experience if I would be able to say, I want to try that one out, or select the second option for me, or I want to try the red color lipstick, or whatever way. If we are able to do that, it will be a perfect blend of augmented reality and voice and would be awesome. So that's what I did. It won the People's Choice Award, and then it was all great. And 2014, I got to do a beta testing. Amazon was looking for beta testers internally to test out Amazon Alexa before they launched it. So I think 2013, not 14. And I was part of that, where we were testing out music and all those stuffs. And it was an experience of lifetime for me. And I was like, I want to be completely immersed and involved in this industry, because this is fascinating. The more I implement, experiment, test it out, the more I want to do that. So I was also part of the Alexa Dot program, where we brought the small puck home. And it was more immersive, where we were testing out it at the home situation, and my entire family was using it, although no one else had access to it. It was just three of us. So we hid it in a place where no one else can find it, right, but still we are using it. That's how it all started. And I started trying out applications, creating my own skills and stuff like that. And then I got a break with VoiceBox technology, where the experience immersed further. And with VoiceBox technology, I was working on their product called Xavier, which was pretty much similar to a smart speaker. Plus, I was also working on the voice assistants for the cars, Nissan, Hyundai, and a couple of other clients, Lucid Motors. So I was working with these clients and working on the voice experiences. And it was great to see the transition and what voice is capable of doing. And then I was hired by Ford to work on the voice experiences for the cars. And it has been a tremendous journey so far, just working and progressing. So
that's awesome. So you've been there since the very pre-release of Alexa, actually. So you're an old timer
in the industry. I am. A veteran.
Although it's fun. You know, it's funny. I used to report to Adam Shire when I joined Viv Labs. And if I ever said something like that, he'd give me the dirtiest look, because he's been doing voice for 25 years. So, but relative to most people, you are definitely been in for a long time there. I was talking earlier about the advice I give people who are thinking about jumping into voice. What would you give, advice would you give if somebody comes to you and says, hey, Shyamala, I'm really interested in voice. Where should I go? Or what should I do? Or how should I get started?
So the first thing I would say is test out the voice applications. That is the first and foremost thing. And that way they can see. And it's not just one voice application or one voice assistant. If you have the flexibility of testing out different, like Siri or Alexa and Google or Samsung, now that Samsung also has access to so many different products, or any other voice applications, just do that first, because that will give you the experiences and you learn about how different companies have designed it. And then, of course, there are a lot of blogs, courses out there, like the Digital Assistant Academy. If you're looking for more immersive experiences, you can definitely learn from such courses. But then there are tons of books and tons of blogs. Kathy Pearl's book, The Voice User Interface, is excellent. And actually, it helped me a lot when I was learning about voice technology myself. So there are great books out there, definitely, and great ones coming out. I know Diana and Rebecca Ivanhoe is working on A Conversation with Things. They will be launching it this year, I guess. So look out for books like that as well. So
now, if I'm not mistaken, you're working on writing a book right now.
I am. My book is called Emotionally Engaged Digital Assistant. And basically, it was supposed to come out last year, but things happens. So it has been delayed. So I don't know when, hopefully this year. But yes, so my book is all about voice interactions and how we can make emotional connections with the users.
Ah, great. I look forward to reading it. You'll have to let me know when it comes out. I'll be an early reader of it. I wanted to talk about your podcast. I had the honor of being a guest on it late last year. The Future is Spoken is the name of your podcast. For our listeners who might not be familiar with your podcast, tell me more about your podcast.
Yeah, The Future is Spoken is an educational podcast. So like I mentioned, there's very limited resources out there when it comes to voice technology or voice in general. And that is why I realized that we should be creating something where it's like one shop stop for people to learn about voice technology, conversation design. So The Future is Spoken podcast brings in experts like you. And I have had like great guests out there, Philip Hunter, Diana Diebel, and Maria Artukalaki, and a lot of great guests came and spoke about different things. So the idea is bringing in one topic about conversation design, like maybe conversation with things or conversation in enterprise AI world or something like that. And just focusing on that specific topic and talking around the best practices or how to tackle that area of conversation design or how to get started in conversation design, what is the path into conversation design, and all sorts of things.
That's great. Yeah, if you haven't subscribed to that podcast, you definitely should. Lots of great guests, but really anchored by a great host yourself. So
thank you so
much.
You
do a great job. I have been a guest, like I said, and you are an amazing, amazing host. So one thing that I hear is a fair number of people, I think it's all the trend now to say, I want to start a podcast, right? So if someone came to you, Shyamala, and said, I want to start a podcast, what would you tell them?
It's a great idea, first of all, but I would say you need to have a clear vision why you are starting a podcast. And if your goal is, in my case, it's solely education, right? So if someone wants to start, you need to have a clear goal, like why you are starting, what you want to do with the podcast in first place. Is it just for monetization or do you want to bring some value through your podcast so that the guests enjoy it? And then, like any other product or service you are working on, when you are doing that, you do competitive analysis. I would do that. I would go through the top podcast and then listen to the podcast and format, because it is really important. How do you structure your first initial podcast? Because that becomes the foundation for your ongoing ones as well. So knowing your structure, how do you want to format it? How do you want to actually lay out everything? And how do you want to actually make sure your podcast is being driven? Everything depends on your initial research. So look at other podcasts and what they've been doing and see if there's a format you like and go from there. There are a lot of great tools out there. I use Descript to edit my audios, which is amazing. And that's about it. I would say there are a lot of great podcasting tools out there. Just know what other things you need. It's not very pricey to create a podcast. So definitely there are cheap options out there, very feasible options and efficient ways to create your podcast, edit them quickly, and then upload them. So have a plan, because this is not something you want to do for a year or so, but you need to think about podcast as a long-time investment. So you also need to start thinking about, okay, how do I get the guest? Is yours, in my case, it is invite only. But in many cases, there are guests can apply for being a guest or a speaker. So you need to have those formats clear in your mind before you start, because this is not something you'll do a year and then you wrap it up.
Such great salient advice. And I'm just going to double your plug for Descript, because I love that tool. I don't know how I edited podcasts before I used it, but is an awesome tool. It's interesting. I agree with everything you're saying. And one thing I would add, and I think you'd agree with this, is be passionate about whatever it is that you're starting in. There's some incredible number of, like over 50% of podcasts don't do more than 2 or 3 episodes or some crazy thing. So you have to be passionate about it and keep going, and you're going to build an audience, right? It's going to take some work. And if you're passionate about it, you can keep going, even in the tough early days or when you finally realize that actually what we're doing right now, the interview is the easy part, in my opinion. It's the easy, fun part. It's the editing. It's the thinking about guests and how you're going to organize it and that and all that. That's much, much more work. The interview is easy. It's the easiest, funnest
it's
thing
the easiest.
About the podcast.
Yeah. I totally agree with you. And if you don't have the passion, definitely after some time, you would feel like it is a lot of work, because creating the podcast intro, outro, and then in my case, it's an audio and video both. So I also have to create the voice template, not the voice template, but the screens in some cases to add into the intros and outros. So there's a lot of work required post-interview, like the editing and all of those kind of things. And definitely it requires some time, effort as well. And so passion is really important for sure.
Yeah, you have to love the topic that you're talking about, and that'll keep you going. So Shama, shifting gears a little bit, what is your take on, you talked about conversational design. What's the state of conversational design right now? Where are we design-wise? Where should we be design-wise?
It's a very interesting question. I would say, although we call ourselves conversational, and although we say conversation design, we are not conversational at all at this point, because there are technology limitations for sure. So if we are having a conversation, like when two people are having conversation, there will be glitches, there will be ums and ahs, and there will be buzzings, like when you're talking something, I will cut you off and then start talking, or maybe things like that. But none of the voice assistants are capable of doing any of those things. If I'm speaking with ums and ahs, it would be like, I'm sorry, I did not get what you said. It's very transactional. So when you ask something, it would just answer it. If I said, what is the weather? It would just give me the weather information. But that's it. It's not conversational. So that's not how humans speak. So when we say conversational, I would say we are really transactional at this point. There are a lot of things, a lot of work to do to really say we are conversational. And I love how Rasa defines the different levels of conversation, like how we define different levels of autonomous vehicles. Like we have level 1, level 2, level 3, level 4, level 5. So level 5 is actually when I would say we will get into real conversational, like how the Rasa team defines it. Because that is when, based on what the user has said or based on some of the previous information, the conversation can steer. It could be proactive, maybe, because I want something and you can start the conversation. So it doesn't have to be that way, like how we are right now. It's like I have to initiate it, and that's when the voice assistant would respond back in a very transactional manner. In very few instances, the context is being held, which means if I said, what is the weather in Seattle? And the bot comes back like, the weather in Seattle is rainy, blah, blah, blah. And if I say, how about Michigan? Until a couple of years back, it was not even possible to do that. Now we are at the stage where we are able to hold some context, but not entirely. So that's one part. Now, the second part is, although we say we are natural, we are not natural when we are speaking with the voice assistants, because voice assistants still expects us to speak in a certain format for the NLU to understand the intent. And so we are stuck, right? We are teaching the users the way to speak, and then we are saying we are natural language. The real beauty would be, or really the conversational vision would be, like, in whatever manner I speak, the assistant should be able to understand me, and it should not teach me this is how I should speak. For example, Amazon or Google, you have to say, okay, Google, talk to Digital Assistant Academy. Okay. And then it will start. That's how it is, but that's not how people speak. If I have to talk to you, I will not say, okay, I want to talk to Roger, and then I'll start the conversation. So we are not there yet. It will take a long time, but there are lots of advancements which has happened in the voice technology space. And I'm hoping that with these advancements, we will get to the stage of level 5 conversations.
Yeah, I like to say, if you want to understand the state of AI, look at voice assistants and you understand there's some amazing things that we've done with voice. And there's so much green field in front of us and so many things that don't work. And it's so obvious. That
they don't.
You're absolutely right. Yeah. It's so simplistic. I always say we're in the bark commands state, right? We bark commands at it. Maybe we have a really simple interactive back and forth. But lacking, there's a little bit of context, but nothing. Even approaching even a young infant's ability to speak and understand context. Yeah, it's pretty crude, which is one of the fun and exciting things about being in the industry. There's so much greenfield in front of us, but also a challenge because people come into it with these kind of like, I can talk, why can't I? Why do I have to say something in an exact phrase it exactly in a particular way? Because we all know we can say something 10 different ways. And it's when you do voice development, you realize, okay, I need to understand all 10 of those ways and think about it. And the day I launch, somebody will say it the 11th way and I'll break. So yeah, no, the AI has a long, long way to go.
A long way,
even though it's so cool what it's done, it is really at the very beginning. Love it.
I would totally agree with you. Yeah, I would totally agree with you and would like to add on a couple of things, even the basic things. Sure. For example, we are very intent-driven right now. So everything is, I have an intent, which is mapped with the utterances, and that's how it speaks. But not that is the reason we are not able to think about all of the different conversations people can have. Maybe some of those through analytics we are able to capture. But in general, we are not thinking about all the different conversations the voice assistant can have with us or can respond to. Just today, my son, we just got a Google Assistant as well for my testing purposes. So he came and he's like, okay, Google, I am having my lunch. And so she was like, her response was amazing. And Google started saying, have fun or something like that. And the same thing he asked to Alexa and she was like, I'm sorry, I did not get that. So basically, we are at the stage where some of the things has to be programmed and that is when it will work. The real state of conversation would be where AI is able to understand the conversations and respond back accordingly without any manning or man effort required.
You are so right. It's so crude, the thing of here's the utterance, here's the intent, and here's the slots, and we got to define all that. And it's like, where's the AI where I can say, hey, if the person says this and the AI then understands that there's 50 different ways to say it, understands all those, it does it for me. That to me, we have to unlock that because it's just too hard. It's really kind of crude and rudimentary the way you develop a voice app and it really holds it back. And you're spot on as a great example. And then it works in one assistant or not another, or the same phrase works in skill A, but not skill B. And you know, it is where it is, but there's AI really needs to be, to my mind, on the developer and designer's side to make it so much easier to build a voice application. And to indeed, I didn't even say conversational app because you're right, we're not conversational. If we're gonna start being conversational, we're gonna need a lot of help from AI to do that.
Yeah, is definitely
the way I look at it. Hey, you know, diversity, such a huge issue in the tech industry. Indeed, it's an issue in the world in general. Where do you think we are with diversity in voice?
We have come a long way, just so we feel better about it. We have come a long way from where we used to be, but there are biases, a lot of biases when it comes to diversity. So even now, the voice assistants are not 100% capable of understanding all of the accents, although they are supporting a lot of languages, but still they miss on a lot of accents. So the first thing is not just supporting like 50 or 100 different languages, but the thing is like understanding those accents of people. Mm-hmm. I have a different accent and my Indian accent is mixed. I don't have any British, accent kind of thing. It's very, very Indianized kind of. Some people have a very thick accent. Some people have a different way of speaking. So the voice assistants do not work for those kind of scenarios. So we have issues there because it does not understand the slangs, the local colloquials or any such things in first place. The second thing is there has been biases where people with a certain diversity are not being understood a lot. And there's statistics like 26 or 27% of people who come from black community are not being understood by the voice assistants. So there's issues like that. And then if you look at the history of the voice assistants, originally these voice assistants were all female, although the companies have a different explanation and a different reasoning for why they had a female voice. But in people's mind, there's a lot of issues with that because we live in a world where feminism has become a term and we relate like the tasks between a male and a female, we compare it like these are the tasks, or we have a clear, I would say, kind of aggregation of these are the tasks which female is supposed to do. These are the tasks males are supposed to do. We are still in that world where this happens. There are clear expectations like those, like females are supposed to sit at home and blah, 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 whatever. So it's surprising. People are like, oh, your husband cooks. Oh, your husband does utensils. And also, even now, people say things like that. The same kind of thing happens with voice assistants as well. And all the female voices were out there, although now they have changed and they have made it female and male and they are giving users the option. But still, in most cases, the default voice is female, right? But how about people who want a gender neutral voice or who don't want a voice which is towards one of these spectrums?
Yeah, I think you're so spot on. The accents, I mean, they're funny but depressing. If you look at, you can jump on YouTube and see people trying to use voice assistants and they have to go and to use a different accent to do it. And sometimes they're done humorously, but behind that is actually a big problem. The accent or the vernacular that's used is not understood. And it's really, it gets down, the training data for the AI has a bias in it because it was all people who spoke this way. Yeah. Who created that training data, not that way. And I think it's one of the biggest challenges because I always say diversity breeds diversity. So if we're going to have a bunch of diverse users, then we need it to understand a diverse set of people. But when someone who maybe speaks one way isn't understood or uses a particular vernacular isn't understood, they're like, oh, this is junk. It doesn't use it. It doesn't work for me. And so they stop using it. And so our user base is really constrained. So it is something definitely for the industry to tackle. And yeah, a lot of work needs to be done there.
A lot. Another thing, what I've realized with the entire thing is it's not just the biases from the voice assistant standpoint, also from the user standpoint, also the same thing is happening. Because we have the female voices, people tend to abuse them more versus the male voices. So the biases both ways, and which has to be fixed, and that will be fixed by conversation designers, by setting the right expectations about how the bot should be perceived and what are the roles and responsibilities of the bot. So there's a lot of things which needs to be tackled and not just the conversations.
Yeah, I would love to see start up your voice assistant and say, what voice do you want? And I haven't seen that. I believe, I'm going to give some kudos to Google. I believe with Google Assistant now, it's 50-50 whether you get a female or male voice, which is really great. That's step one. But in some sense, it would be, let me choose and let me make it really easy. Many of the voices, they have many different voices, male or female, but it's hidden behind all these settings. And I think there's a lot of opportunity there to bring that up front, let people choose or let people change it or what they like. And you're absolutely right. When a voice assistant, the word assistant, and it has a female voice, all kinds of gender stereotypes are brought into that kind of thinking there. And it's a problem. And I think the answer is, don't make it by default female. Let people choose, right? Or do maybe what Google's solution is best. 50-50, right? Whatever you... I don't pretend to know the answer. I do know there's a problem, and I do know us as an industry need to tackle it. So what about inclusiveness? Where are we as far
That's
as inclusiveness?
Amazing. That's amazing questions. If you look at the... We are trying to be inclusive, definitely. But if you look at how it all started... When Amazon was launched, it was just a puck, a smart speaker. So the expectation and the assumption was that hands-free, eyes-free. So the moment you said eyes-free, first of all, you are discriminating against people who cannot speak and who cannot hear. And they are dependent on eyes. Like they are dependent on seeing something to make decisions or interact. Then the Echo Show came and then other things as well came. But we are still not 100% inclusive. There are so many different populations who are missed out. So yes, we are doing for blind people. They are able to now speak. They are able to now see something on the screen through screen readers and things like that. There are people who have issues hearing. They are able to see things because you are creating a multimodal experience. But then it's not like every product out there is providing inclusivity, right? It's like some products are there and now you have to pick and choose. If I want a smart glass, which is voice enabled, the assumption is that, yes, you are perfect in all conditions to use it. How about people who have speech impairments? Autism is a big thing. Or people who have Down syndromes. People who are not able to speak clearly. These voice assistants will not even understand those people. I know Google is doing great work and some research on such things and trying to collect a lot of data with such a population so that they can improve the speech recognition systems. And there's a long way to go even in that part of the world as well. But even if you look at psychological disorders or look at other kind of things. The moment I think about inclusivity and when I think about accessibility, I think about using a solution irrespective of age, ability, and situations. So situation could be temporary, situations could be permanent. Irrespective of that, the voice assistant should be able to be used. The expectation is the voice assistant would work with a specific distance, far-fetched, right? After that, it will not. What I have in the kitchen, my hands are busy and my Alexa is somewhere very far out. I cannot. I have to yell, Alexa, do this. So that's not inclusive. Mm-hmm. Because that's banning on the situation. I'm not able to use it in the situation where I need the most. So then I have to keep it near me and use it. So if these voice assistants have to work, they have to work in all situations, irrespective. And it could be, like I mentioned, I may be in the car and I'm driving, my eyes are busy, and it should still be able to work. And I don't have to look at the screen all the time. So there has to be different modalities. There has to be a complementing experience, voice, touch, screen, audios, chimes, vibrations, anything. You have to have a lot of different kind of things to make it inclusive. And we are not yet there. We are, I would say, like just 40% there when it comes to inclusivity in voice assistants.
This is another area where we should use AI to help us. Or we should just use some practical things. It struck me the other day. When I'm watching TV, I can turn on subtitles. It's pretty easy to do. But use your voice assistant, obviously, with something on the screen. It may be speaking something, and only sometimes it's showing the screen. Why isn't there a simple setting that shows subtitles of what's being spoken right on the screen? Maybe I do or don't want it on, but that should be available for any user. It's that kind of thinking. That's something simple. But if you start thinking about it, and I love what were those three pillars, age, ability, and situation. I wrote them down because I thought that was a great way of thinking about it. You need to think about all those. And that's hard to do, actually. There's an art and a science to thinking about including all of those. But one of the things that I love about voice is I think it can bring inclusiveness into technology and open it up. But we need to be really careful because I don't think I'm going to condemn the tech industry a little bit. That has always been really good about inclusiveness. As a matter of fact, I think it's been a weakness in the tech industry, and sometimes it bleeds over into voice. How we think about things, we don't think about those. So,
exactly.
Yeah. Amen. Amen.
And you know the reason I'll tell you, we think about inclusivity and accessibility as a regulation. And until and unless the mindset shift happens and we don't think about it as a regulation because these are regulatory practices for making inclusive design. But if it comes as a discipline, if it comes from the heart, okay, this is something like inclusivity by design. That is when you will do a better job and we are not yet there.
Yeah, I was thinking inclusivity for humanity. Let's do it for to be a human. And Yes. You're so spot on. All those websites weren't screen reader enabled until they started getting sued, or there's regulations that made them do that. That's regretful that it wasn't, hey, I want whatever I'm creating to be accessible by the broadest number of people possible. And so I'm going to just build it that way and do that. And yeah, for humanity, not for legal humanity. Reasons. Yeah, yep. Absolutely. Hey, I want to switch gears a little bit. As you know, I work for Samsung, and Samsung's vision for Bixby is enable voice on devices that consumers already have. So things like your TV in your house or your appliance. So this is beyond, above and beyond smart speakers. and to some degree phones, although we clearly enable it on phones. So what do you think of that? What do you think about being able to talk to your appliance or being able to talk to your TV or being able to talk to device X in your home?
It's a great feature to have for sure. It enables so many people in so many different ways. Some people may argue that voice enabling everything is making you lazy and you don't want to speak. There may be pros and cons for you don't want to touch anything or you don't want to walk around and do stuff. There may be things like that, but there are so many pros as well. If you look at this thing, senior citizens at home who are alone and they want to do something, these appliances could be so helpful if I was just able to say, when I'm cooking, I don't know a lot of things. How much degrees centigrade or Fahrenheit should I be baking at? I'm very naive when it comes to baking or stuff like that. So if the appliance is able to help me out, make such decisions like, okay, how much time would I need to bake this? And it tells me and does that for me. Amazing. So I don't have to go through multiple things. Right now when I'm cooking, it's like I have a laptop in front of me with the recipe and then I have all the different things I keep because my phone is small enough and I don't want to scroll through and do stuff. So I like doing it that way. And then I have to do, okay, check this recipe, check that recipe. Okay, this ingredient is there and all of those stuff. So there's so many opportunities appliances provide, like whether it is in your for your refrigerator, looking at the refrigerator, inside the refrigerator, scanning and saying, these are the ingredients. This is what you can make. Or you're running out of this. Do you want me to add it into your shopping list or things like that? There's a lot of opportunities and it gives convenience to the users definitely when people are asking for such things. So we live in a world where convenience is everything. I would pay extra bucks or extra money for convenience anytime. And that's the kind of world we live in. Like we value convenience more than anything else. And if these appliances are voice enabled and is giving the user that level, provided it is inclusive for everyone, definitely sure. It will be a great experience.
Yeah, I get all excited about voice in the kitchen because I'm a passionate home cook, actually. I love to cook. And so I want it to be I call it my sous chef. So help me out and time things and turn things on and do that. And maybe scold me if I do something wrong or I can get advice and things. And I think there's such an opportunity there. But yeah, it gets to this kind of idea of ambient computing and just being able to don't have to worry about what device it is. I just talk and something happens, right? And my home listens or my office listens or my car listens, what you work on during the day. And it just happens and I don't worry about it. I think right now we think about the device a lot. And I think we should just think about just being able to talk and something somewhere picks it up and gets it done. I think that future is coming. So speaking of, we're getting into voice in general and in the future, what about the near-term future over the next year or so? Where would you like to see voice go over the next year? Where do you think it's going to go? What's your prediction for 2021 in voice?
This is a very good question. I would say this space is becoming very crowded. In general, right now you have so many options. It's like people have option to choose from Samsung or Alexa or Google or Siri and all these assistants and even the one in the car, which brings us to a very interesting competitive space. Like we are working, like we are just trying to compete in the space all together and trying to, the user has so many options. They can choose whatever they want. What I would really want in 2021 is some sort of collaboration between these. Like you mentioned, you are going towards that stage. No matter who I speak to, it should work. That's the kind of collaboration I'm talking about, irrespective of how many voice assistants I have. I should be able to just say, because for me as an end user, I want to get things done through voice. I don't care whether it is Samsung or Alexa or Google or whatever assistant. It should be able to do. Now, that kind of collaboration between Amazon, Google, Samsung, all these tech companies who are working on voice technology, where they are able to arbitrate or they are able to partner, whatever is the strategy should be there. And for the end user, the effort would be less. They don't have to remember 10 different ways to invoke and say, okay, Google, do this, or tell this to do this, or Alexa, tell this to do that, or tell Ford to start my car, or something like that. All of these kind of things is too much load on the user. So I want to make sure the voice assistants of 2021, this is where we head towards, or at least create the foundation for such kind of work.
So amen to that. I'd love to see voice go the way of the web browser, right? Where there's a bunch of browsers out there, but you can build something easily that works on all of them. And thanks to my mind, that, because that's really what unleashed the web, is the client became less important. And I think what we're talking about is a little bit of who cares? There's a microphone and a speaker somewhere. And yes, the company that's selling the microphone and the speaker care a lot. But really, I want to be able to say something and make it happen. And I don't care who I bought it from there. And yeah, I'm all for standards and collaboration and the voice going the way of the web. And I think if it's going to really make a difference, I'm going to make my bold assertion that it has to go more in that direction. But let me, Shamil, let me ask you to rub your crystal ball and think out 5 or 10 years in the future. Where are we going to be 5 or 10 years from now?
5 or 10 years from now, it will be all a cohesive experience. I love to call it that way because now I'm listening to music in my house and then I'm able to continue the same music. Let's imagine that now I'm in the car, okay, driving to office. The same music, instead of me saying, start this music or play this music, it automatically knows I have transitioned from my home to the car and it should continue that. And the same kind of experiences where it's very cohesive, it knows where I am and automatically the transition happens without me doing anything. And even at home, it's everything so connected that I don't have to worry about anything anymore. We already have routines and stuff like that, but I think that will all become big part of our life, that we will be completely dependent on such routines where I have a perfect routine and my car knows my everything. It knows that in the morning I have these home routines, turning on the coffee maker and closing the blinds or opening the blinds or whatever it is, to the point where it knows, like, at this time I drop my son to school, and then all of those, everything is mapped in the car, everything is mapped in the house, and it knows my schedule. That's where we'll be heading. Like, I don't have to, it will become a no-brainer kind of experience for people.
Yeah, you're saying it needs to be an assistant. It actually understands what you want to do.
Everything.
It does it for you, right? Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, truly deserving of the moniker assistant. Absolutely. Well, you're hereby invited to, I tell my guests, in 5 or 10 years, we're going to have to get together and look at our crystal ball predictions and see how incredibly right or wrong we all got them. Look for that invite 5 or 10 years from now. Hey, so one of my favorite questions I love to ask everyone is, aside from voice experiences that you've built, Shamil, give me an example of a couple voice experience, one or two voice experiences that you'd really love and you'd like to share with the listeners.
Wow, that's an interesting question. Wow, yeah. Outside of the ones I have designed, I like some of the small talks Google has designed, because they have done a great job when it comes to designing the overall experiences. So for example, the other day we were doing the throwdown of the voice assistants, and one of the thing was testing the voice assistant for small talks and ethics and bot abuse and things like that. And the way it has been designed, it's excellent and amazing. I asked Google, will you marry me? It had this cool response, and it was like, let me make it clear that it had this response, which was like setting the expectation. I don't remember the exact words, but it was like, let me make it clear. I like you, but I'm not ready for commitment. Okay. And the second thing it said, and one thing we both have to agree on, is I'm here to help you. And then I'm not, a marriage or commitment makes me worried, or something like that. So this response was very cool and very funny, because first of all, the bot is setting the expectations right then and there. There was, when in the agree on the screen, there were like quotes where it is saying that give me consent or you give me consent, which was tied into the experience. And then the overall response was so smart. So I love playing around with Google and other assistants and just do the small talks and see where they break and where they fail. And Google has always surprised me.
Yeah, that's fun. It's the almost the human side of it. A little small talk. Hey, you're talking about small talk, and I don't know if this is true. I haven't done any Google development, but it used to be when you use Dialogflow, you could actually add what they called small talk to your action which would be a bunch of how are you, what's happening, and then you could build that into your, I was going to say skill, your action, skill action capsule. Why doesn't the darn industry have one name for it? That's why I say voice experience. But yeah, no, that it's fun. It's the humor in it or the humanity in it, make it more human. And I will say that I happen to know that these teams actually have whole teams that think about that stuff, that work about that. And also it's seasonal. Yeah. So it'll look at the season and answer differently there. So there's whole team. Seems like a pretty fun job, actually. You get to think of creative ways to answer these and program them in. Shama, if people want to keep in touch with what you, your podcast, or the Conversational Design Academy do, what's the best way to do it?
So I am very active on LinkedIn. So you can just look up Shamla Prayaga and just find me there. And then Twitter, my handle is sprayaga. And if you follow me in these two places, you will get all of the information about me, my work, the academy, and also the podcast. If you want to subscribe to the podcast or listen to the podcast, name is The Future is Spoken, and the domain name is also thefutureisspoken.com.
Great. And I will make sure to include all that information in the show notes. And I will say you should be following you and subscribing to your podcast. So you haven't done that, as soon as this podcast is over, go subscribe to Shamla's podcast.
Thank you so much.
You're absolutely welcome. Hey, Shama, you're really so important to the voice community. I've always been impressed. I asked you at the beginning, do you get any sleep? Because I'm really, but I meant that in the best way of you do so much for voice and the community, professionally, conversational design, you're active on social media. Just an amazing job you do. It's been amazing talking to you today. Thank you so much for being a guest.
Thank you so much, Roger. It has been my pleasure, actually, speaking with you. We share the same passion, so definitely it's been a pleasure.
Yeah, absolutely. We do share the same passion. Such a fun time talking to you. All right, so that's all, folks. Till next time, this is Roger Kibbe of the Bixby Developers Chat Podcast signing off.